I'd like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10 and will then answer any questions from the audience. I have no clue who the speaker is, so let's welcome Zach.
Hi, everybody. My name's Zach. I'm an alcoholic. I honestly thought there'd be a better turnout than this. But it's an absolute honor and privilege to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to come here and speak. Alcoholics Anonymous has truly changed the course of my life. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed me as a person. And when Ron asked me to speak, I said yes. So it's good to be here. I kind of want to take a little bit of time to talk about what I was like before I got here, how I got to be where I am today as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, 8 years sober. I came from a pretty normal home, you know, and I think a lot of us do. And every normal home is a little bit dysfunctional. You know, that's the truth of the matter. And my household was no different. You know, I wasn't abused as a kid. Nothing crazy happened. My mom did like to throw dishes. There was just a lot of fighting in my house, you know, and I don't think it was atypical. But there was a lot of shouting. There was a lot of dishes flying in my household. And my father wasn't around a lot, you know. My older brother, 4 years my senior, he was my role model, and I followed him around, and he was kind of like my dad, you know. When I was nine, my older brother gave me my first cigarette, you know, and he shaved a mohawk into his head, and he started wearing a leather jacket and boots, and I thought he was just the coolest thing in the world, and I just followed him, you know, anywhere he went, and anything he did. You know, he got a spike collar, and I got a spike collar, and he shaved a mohawk into his head, and I shaved a mohawk, and he said, fuck everybody and everything, and that's what I started to do, too. When I was 11, my older brother bought me my first 40 of Old English, I was 11 years old. I was I'd say 120, 130 pounds, and I was able to get down about three quarters of that 40. And I was with him and a few of his friends, and they were all older than me, and I just wanted to impress him. You know, I just wanted to be like my older brother, and I wanted to fit in. So I just remember just knocking that thing back and just drinking it as fast as I could just to impress him. It was a Tuesday. It was the summertime. It was the middle of the day. I got drunk as shit. My older brother got into a fight with one of the neighbors. Then we all decided to go on a walk in broad daylight. We were all underage, and we were all three sheets to the wind. The only thing I remember is it was a very curious thing. The sidewalk kept springing up at me and slapping me in the face. I'd never experienced that before, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'd never been drunk before. But every time it happened, it felt like somebody was bashing me in the head with a cue ball. We made it about a mile before I couldn't walk anymore. We ended up under a bridge, just kind of hanging out, and I was scuffed up and scraped up and just covered in puke. The cops showed up. And shortly after the cops showed up, I just remember I couldn't really see, everything was spinning, but I remember hearing my mom cussing a blue streak, as she often did. The next thing I remember, I woke up about a day later, that both sides of my mom's pickup truck were just covered in vomit. I felt like shit, and my parents weren't speaking to me. That was my first experience with alcohol. Drugs are part of my story, and I do talk about drugs in my story. And before I do, I just want to say that occasionally, nowadays, every once in a while, when you mention drugs in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, someone starts to talk about the traditions, which is fine. I just want to say that drugs are mentioned in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous numerous times. Most people in AA nowadays have had experience with drugs. That's my experience as well. And the reason that I talk about drugs in my story is because drugs are the majority of my story. And I think that it's very important for me, in AA, in order to be of service to other people, to be very candid about what it was like, where I've been, and how I got sober, you know. And I don't have a lot to say about alcohol. I drank a lot, but I did a lot of other drugs too, you know. And I've done a lot of service work in H&I. You know, when you're talking to a guy that's covered from head to toe in tattoos, I got to tell him what it's like to kick dope in jail, you know, in order to get his attention. Otherwise, I just look like a, you know, a clean-cut preppy, and he won't listen to me. So my first experience with marijuana was a little different. Before I talk about that, I want to say this. My sponsor, Bobby Davis, was in here doing his pitch a few months ago, and I was here to listen to him. And he said, I'll never forget what he said. He said, I had no idea how miserable I was till I took my first drink. And that was my experience with marijuana. You know, I didn't know how miserable I was because I had nothing to compare it to till I started smoking weed for the first time. And I just remember... I just remember laughing uncontrollably for hours, you know, and it was great. It was just the best thing I'd ever done. And I remember thinking that, you know, I want to do this every day for the rest of my life, you know. And so that's what I started to do. You know, when I wasn't using marijuana and drinking alcohol, I was thinking about how I could get it or what I could do. And I started failing in school. I started sort of withdrawing from society, you know, from my schoolmates. I didn't really have any friends. I just wanted to drink and get high by myself. That's really what I wanted to do. When I was 16, I was drinking and getting high every day, and I decided that I didn't want to live with my parents anymore. So I told them I was moving out, and I had a girlfriend. She was about 4 years older. She was going to college up in Humboldt County. I was living with my parents in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I told them I'm moving out, you know. And they had a few things to say about that, but ultimately, I left home when I was 16 to finish high school in Humboldt County. Now, if any of you ever have kids, and they tell you that they want to go to college in Humboldt County, that's the marijuana capital of California, and they're not going there to go to school. They're going there to get high every day, which is what I had planned. So I moved in with my girlfriend. She had rich parents. She was kind of a vile human being. She had her septum pierced, and she had her nostrils pierced, and she had about 20 piercings in each ear, and she dyed her hair so many times it was frizzy and ratty. She was slightly overweight, and that was my girlfriend, and I moved in with her, and went enrolled in high school up there and finished up my high school education, and I just proceeded to get drunk every day. You know, got drunk in the morning, got drunk at lunch, got drunk when I got home from school, drank all through the weekend. That's just kind of what I did, you know, and the class of people that I associated with just got lower and lower. I remember I had these neighbors. They were a couple that had been together for a few years, Bob and Jen, and I hung out with them from time to time. Bob was he was a hippie, he was a pot farmer, he was on disability for a supposed mental condition, and this guy was like my best friend, you know, And Bob told me, just to kind of give you an idea of the types of people I was hanging out with, Bob told me a story once about how they were going to take his SSI check away because they didn't think that he was actually insane. And so when he went in for an assessment, he brought a knife with him. And they wanted to take his check away, so they were assessing his mental condition, and he took his shirt off and pulled out a knife, and he sliced himself across the chest, and he showed me the scar. He had this gnarly, like, foot-long scar across his chest, and he was very motivated to be lazy. But like I said, he was a pot farmer. You know, he taught me how to farm marijuana. And his girlfriend, also pretty classy human being. Actually, I just Her name was Jen. She was so high all the time that I don't think I ever saw her once with her eyes open. She was always talking through half-closed eyes, and she smelled horrible. Those are the people I hung out with, and they would come over to my house, and they always had this brown stuff dripping out of their noses, you know. And they were always kind of like really mellow and really like kind of on the nod, you know. And I was 17 when I realized that they were doing heroin. And they turned me on to it, you know. That's what I started doing. So I would snort heroin with Bob and Jen and grow marijuana. You believe it or not, it actually got worse than that. You know, I started hanging out with street kids. I took on a second girlfriend who turns out was also a hooker. She introduced me to these people were using heroin intravenously, and so I started doing that at 17. That was a wild ride. Now, at the time, I was enrolled. I had graduated high school. I was enrolled in junior college. I had a part-time job at a wood shop, and I was just kind of doing my thing. And as soon as I started shooting up, I realized, like, this is amazing. I have to do this every day, all the time. This is fucking awesome. It turns out that's really expensive, you know. So I dropped out of college, which I wasn't doing that hot at anyways. Upped my hours at the wood shop, working full time, selling drugs on the side, ended up cheating on my time card at work, getting fired. You know, me and my girlfriend, we lived in a trailer at the time, got kicked out of there, ended up back with my parents in the San Francisco Bay Area. The first rehab they put me in, I just wasn't ready to stay sober. I just wasn't ready to stay sober. Just wasn't ready for it. So I got kicked out of rehab, and I was stealing from my parents. And I remember the Thanksgiving day, a couple months after they took me back in, my mother had a turkey in the oven. She was baking dinner rolls. She was making guacamole. And she went into the bathroom and she found all these little broken balloons next to the sink. Needless to say, I ruined Thanksgiving. They had to kick me out. They had to let me go. You know, they just had to let me go. I spent the next 5 to 6 months homeless on the streets of San Francisco. I got addicted to crack. I went to jail numerous times. And it was brutal. It was awful, you know. And I don't even want to really get into all that. But it got so bad that, you know. And the book talks about this. The book talks about, you know, we can go. We really don't have many options, you know. And I was absolutely forced into going to AA through lack of options. So I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember a few weeks before I went to my first rehab. I was in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and I was buying drugs. And for some reason, my boots were untied, and some guy tried to rob me. Like, I bought some drugs, and some guy tried to rob me, and he hauled off to hit me, and I took off running so fast that I left one of my boots behind, you know. And the last, you know, couple weeks of my using career, I was walking around the streets of the Tenderloin with no shoes on and stocking feet, you know. So that's what I say is I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with no shoes on. And I was willing. I was very willing to get sober when I got sober. Funny thing I want to talk a little bit about is when I got to AA, started going to some of my first meetings. What I encountered was just people. You know, meetings are just people, and I was scared to death of people. You know, I'd always run away from people, and I spent several years in AA trying to work the steps, trying to get a sponsor, doing it kind of half-heartedly, running away from the fellowship. I knew I had to work a program, but I just didn't want to deal with the people. You know, I was just emotionally immature. brimming over with self-hatred, and just kind of spent a lot of time with one foot in the program and one foot out of the program, and that didn't work out too well for me. You know, it was very difficult for me to reach out to people to ask for help. And what I found in AA was I found girls, you know, and I found that even though my social skills weren't great, you know, if I worked out a lot, you know, and if I approached enough women, eventually I'd find one that was sick enough to ignore the fact that I was all fucked up, you know. And so that's kind of what I did my first 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, is jumped from girlfriend to girlfriend, basically running away from spiritual growth, you know. And I didn't get sober. I got sober for the last time when I was 24, you know. And that was in 2004. Like I said, I've been sober 8 years. And it's been an amazing ride. You know, towards the end, I was going to AA meetings drunk. I didn't know what to do. There's a part in, I think it's A Vision for You, where the book talks about the alcoholic who can't imagine his life with or without alcohol, you know. And I tried to stay sober, and it was miserable. And I knew that drinking and using drugs was miserable, and I didn't know what to do, you know. I was at what they call the jumping off place, and it's a very hopeless place. Going to meetings drunk, you know you're fucked when you're going to AA meetings drunk. And I was approached by a friend of mine who didn't approach me as a friend, but he approached me as a sponsor. He basically told me, look, you know, you and I are going to go through the book. We're gonna do everything that it says to do in the book. If it's not in the book, you don't have to do it. So we started meeting weekly. For some reason, after 4 years of going to AA meetings, I was sick of AA meetings. I was sick of people who talked program, but for some reason I really believed that this guy could help me. I really believed that AA had an effect on his had an impact on his life, and that this guy had something that I wanted, you know. And we started to go through the book, and he told me, when I told him I was sick of going to meetings, he told me that meetings aren't for you, they're for helping other people. And that was a big shift for me. You know, I started going to the Salvation Army, doing H&I work. I was working the steps, I had sponsees, and I was going to meetings to help people, you know. And I was praying quite a bit. And that, you know, that helped me. 12-step work really helped me for a good number of years. I like the 12 step. It's busy work. I spent my first several years in AA just crazy as shit, you know, just so crazy, couldn't even hold a thought in my head. And going to institutions and working with inmates, working with people that were really had a lot more problems than I had. It kept me busy, you know, and it kept me close to God. Thank you. I had various spiritual experiences working with other alcoholics. The problem is that 12-step isn't everything, you know. And I think for myself, at some point, I was relying too heavily on working with other alcoholics, and I wasn't really focusing on myself. And I got tapped out. I just ran out of juice, and I got sick of it. Because I think one of the things I'm learning nowadays in AA is that I have to focus my attention to creating balance in my life. You know, having too many sponsees, having 10 sponsees is too much. You know, I need to focus on my own spiritual growth. I need to focus on having hobbies, recreational activity, building a social circle, having relationships, in addition to carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so at some point, I think it was probably around 3 or 4 years of sobriety, I just got sick of doing 12-step work, you know, and I didn't know what else to do, and I kind of reached a bottom in sobriety. Just reached a bottom, just got sick of AA, and my behavior, needless to say, got unscrupulous. And I think a lot of us in AA talk about that. You know, the sometimes we lose sight of the solution. You know, sometimes we get sick of meetings and we have to wander away to realize what it's like and then come back. And that's what happened to me. I stopped working with newcomers. I was going to maybe a meeting a week, which isn't enough for me personally. And I wandered away from AA. And my life got sick and my life got miserable. And my life got very boring. What happened was I was in a relationship, and I was completely unlovable, just so sick, incapable of giving or receiving love. And this woman that I was with, she couldn't stand me. And so we were together for, 3 years? And she left, and I was just in horrible pain over the end of that relationship, you know. And I'm so grateful that that ended. I'm so grateful that she had the courage to end that relationship, because it really took me down to a level where I had to reinvolve myself with 12-step work, to start over and do another inventory, take on more sponsees. What I found in AA is that AA doesn't have all the answers I need, you know. I was watching a documentary on Bill Wilson a month or two ago, and we have 62 different 12-step programs, you know. And it turns out a lot of those people know their shit too. They know a lot of 12-step solution, and started kind of exploring other avenues in 12-step, you know, going to a few other fellowships, addressing some of the other issues I have. Turns out growing up without a dad kind of fucks you up, you know, makes you a little crazy. So I've just found just a tremendous amount of healing, not just in AA, but in other 12-step programs. I relocated from the San Francisco Bay Area in 2006 to Orange County, and I really had to start over. I didn't have any friends out here. I had a few family members, but I didn't know the area. I didn't know anybody. Didn't know where the good meetings were. And what I did was I started going to Orange Olive. I started going to the Friendship Club, and I started going to the Fullerton Alano Club or Costa Mesa Alano Club, which is a real hole. I started going to these Alano clubs, going to meetings, and what I found is that the support of AA is available to me wherever I go, you know. It's very, very difficult and stressful to relocate in sobriety. I didn't realize what a support network I had in the San Francisco Bay Area getting sober there until I left it, and I was just all alone out here. And I found the hand of AA here, you know. You can relocate in sobriety, find new meetings, find friends, find support, you know. I've heard a lot of horror stories of people trying to move in sobriety and not going to meetings right away. You know, if you move in sobriety, I highly recommend that you find new meetings and you find them quick. That said, you know, it took me several years to get a foundation here in Orange County, you know. Not all meetings listed in the directory are good meetings, you know. I have to go to, you know, hundreds of meetings before I found my people, you know, people that were my age in sobriety. Men's meetings have been very, very, very beneficial to me. My home group is on a Friday night in Irvine. It's a young men's meeting. And we just have a blast. We joke around. We're incredibly vulgar. And we have a blast, you know. We just have a blast in sobriety. And that's important to me. You know, I have to have fun. I have to have fun in my sobriety. So that's about all I have to say this morning. Thank you so much for having me. What happens now? Do I sit down? Do I stay up here? What am I? Sit down. Okay, well, thank you so much. All right.